T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good afternoon, and thank you for being here or for tuning in, wherever you are. Yesterday, I announced that we believe that we're seeing early signs that the mitigation efforts are starting to pay off. And I don't want anybody to misunderstand what I said yesterday or what I'm saying today. We are seeing early signs that the curve is starting to flatten. But what this means is we have to continue to do those things that have caused the curve to flatten, that have caused the slowing of the spread of this virus and this disease. And that's the mitigation measures, the stay-at-home order, getting out only when absolutely necessary, and doing those things that are essential, and not doing essential things every day. And when you do, practice social distancing, and now you're being encouraged to wear a mask when you have to get out and in close proximity to other people, making sure you're following all the hygiene measures that we've been talking about all along, such as controlling your cough, such as washing your hands frequently with soap and water for 20 seconds, for using hand sanitizer, staying 6 feet away from people, and so forth. Now, we still cannot say with absolute confidence that the curve is flattening, but we are still seeing more evidence that we are moving in that direction. I would also remind people that our modeling and national modeling, and I know that everybody's paying attention to this these days, they are showing that we believe we're improving what the outcome is going to be. But all of that modeling is premised upon the assumption that we continue to effectively do the mitigation. And so if you want our numbers to spike, and I promise you they will, all we have to do is stop paying attention to, stop complying with the mitigation measures, and we're going to see our numbers spike right back up to where they were. And so it's really essential that the people of Louisiana hear this message and understand that just because we think we're starting to flatten the curve doesn't mean our job is over. And in fact, now is the time to double down. This is still going to be a very difficult week, and next week is going to be difficult, and I'm going to go over those numbers here in just a second. But I do want to tell the people of Louisiana, I appreciate those who are complying, and I think that we're getting more compliance over time, not less. We still know there are a lot of people and some regions of our state that, quite frankly, aren't doing as well as they should, and I'm encouraging them to do better and understand that this is a statewide problem, and there'll be some more information that will establish that pretty conclusively here in just a second. So as of noon today, we reported 1,417 new cases. So we now have 16,284 cases across the state. And I want to remind you all that every time we talk about a number, whether it's that number I just went over, 1,417 new cases or over 16,000 cases, we're always talking about our fellow Louisianans. These are human beings. These are our brothers and our sisters and so forth. And that should never be lost on any of us. Unfortunately, we are reporting today 70 new deaths. That is the highest number we have reported at any time in a 24-hour report. And remember, we're not saying that 70 people died in the last 24 hours, but that is the report that we have today, is that 70 new deaths have been attributed to COVID-19. Some of these people expired and many of them, perhaps most of them, expired before yesterday, but the report just came in today because the testing finally confirmed that the individual had COVID-19. 519 patients are currently on ventilators. That's a big number, but it's actually a decrease yesterday from 552 patients. And what this reflects, we believe, is improvements in the way we are dispensing medical care in Louisiana and achieving better results with fewer people having to be placed on vents and people being able to come off vents a little earlier than we originally thought would be the case. Again, thank the medical community out there, all those doctors, all those nurses, all the respiratory therapists, and everybody else associated with delivering health care in Louisiana currently under doctors, all those nurses, all the respiratory therapists, and everybody else associated with delivering health care in Louisiana currently under these very difficult conditions. And while the number of patients on vents went down, the number of patients in the hospital actually went up. We currently have 1,996 patients hospitalized across the state with COVID-19 and a number of others who are still under investigation. And I think that number is about 990 that are under investigation. In fact, you can see it there. They are in the hospital, and a large percentage of those are ultimately going to prove to be positive for COVID-19. I do want to make a correction regarding the number of hospitalizations we announced yesterday. There was a data reporting error, and the number of patients hospitalized yesterday was actually 1,981. And we reported a different number than that, and I apologize. We're taking steps to make sure that that does not happen again because we are trying to be transparent, we're trying to be timely, and we're trying to be accurate. I mentioned yesterday that, and in fact, this is the source of a lot of national news reporting right now, not just in Louisiana, but around the country. We know that just over 70% of the COVID-19 related deaths in Louisiana are deaths of African Americans, while they make up 32 to 33% of our population. We are looking into this further and trying to figure out everything we can about that. For example, what percentage of overall cases do we think African Americans make up? What is the role of comorbidities in these deaths and so forth? And we have a lot more questions than we have answers at this time. I believe yesterday we may have been the first state to report on this, and we're trying to get more information, not less, and as soon as we have more, we're going to share that with you. We know that there are now confirmed cases in 63 of our 64 parishes. We added Cameron Parish today. Tensaw is the only one out there without a confirmed positive case of COVID-19, but I can assure you it is in Tensaw Parish, just as it is in every parish and every community. The virus and the disease is out there. This is truly a statewide public health emergency, and that's why we need everyone's cooperation all across the state of Louisiana. One of the bright spots in this is we have ramped up testing in Louisiana to a degree that, quite frankly, no other state has done. According to the information we have, we're now number one in the country in per capita testing. And I think that speaks volumes to the efforts that we have underway, led by the team at the Department of Health and Office of Public Health, and of course Dr. Alex B has been here with us every time that we've had one of these press conferences, and he's working hard every single day with his team, but I did want to point that out. And by the way, I don't say that because we're satisfied. We're not. We want a lot more testing, and we want a lot more testing in rural areas especially. We know we need more testing in the river parishes, and we're moving in that direction as well, and you may have some more questions about that. But I did want to point out that we have now administered more tests in the state of Louisiana per capita than anywhere else in the country. In fact, we're right at 75,000 tests now. A bright spot has also been the incredible report that we have received from businesses, neighbors, and nonprofits To date, all 64 parishes have received PPE, and 126 medical facilities statewide have received supplies. I specifically want to thank Apple today and AmeriCorps for sending masks to our state. As promised by Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, we received 400,000 masks last night and are in the process of distributing them. AmeriCorps transferred to us about 14,000 N95 masks this week as well. We are grateful for all the help that we are receiving, and we thank everyone for their generosity. Also, we want to encourage everyone to support our businesses, our Louisiana businesses, as much as possible. One way that you can do this is buying locally. And I join Wildlife and Fisheries Secretary Jack Monasay and encourage everyone who's going to go out and buy seafood, purchase seafood that was caught in Louisiana by Louisiana fishermen, or packaged here and produced here and that sort of thing. The state's fishing industry is still reeling from last year, which was particularly tough with the multiple openings of the Bonacary Spillway and the floodwaters that put too much fresh water in certain areas of the state. So when you go out and purchase food, please think about spending a few dollars on seafood caught and produced here in Louisiana. Every dollar helps. And if you want to find out where you can purchase local seafood, you can go to LouisianaDirectSeafood.com. LouisianaDirectSeafood.com. From there, you can arrange local pickup, or you can have it shipped to your home. And before I take questions from the press, we're going to start something a little bit new today. We have a lot of people who are staying at home, and they have questions for me that, quite frankly, you're not asking. So we're going to start taking a few of their questions, and we're going to start today with taking two. So if members of the public, if you have questions that you want asked, please submit your questions to askjbe@la.gov. Askjbe@la.gov, and we will get to some of those at future press conferences or on social media. We'll try to respond to as many as we can. Today we have two questions that we're going to entertain. The first is from Maggie. Maggie is from New Orleans, and she asks, if so many people who are positive or asymptomatic, why are we limiting testing to only those with symptoms? Isn't it important to identify all positive so that they don't spread the virus unknowingly? It is absolutely essential that people don't spread the virus, whether they know they're positive or not. But the fact of the matter is, and I confirmed this again with Dr. BU this morning, the tests are not designed to give a reliable result for someone who is asymptomatic. And so someone who is asymptomatic may actually have the disease, may be shedding and transmitting the virus, but the test is going to potentially come back negative, giving that individual a false sense of security, so that rather than engaging in the mitigation measures, he or she would be more likely to go out and start interacting with people again. And so that's why we don't do it. And while we have those 75,000 or so tests we've already done, we haven't done as much as we need. And we have priorities that we're trying to focus on, folks like first responders, people in the medical community, people who are in our hospital, so that if they don't have the virus, we don't have to burn as much PPE and caring for them and all those sort of things. So that's why we're not administering tests to people who are asymptomatic. But as Dr. Fauci said a long time ago, everybody should behave as if they believe they have it and that the person closest to them has it. And if we'll do that and follow all the mitigation measures, we're all going to be in much better place. Secondly, Palmer from Baton Rouge asks, what is your advice for small business owners who live paycheck to paycheck and can't afford to pay employees for 2 weeks or even take out a loan? First of all, I encourage all small business owners like Palmer to apply for the Paycheck Protection Program and do it today if you haven't already done so. It's imperative that you do this now because there are $349 billion available. I saw just a moment ago a report that says $60 billion has already been allocated. So about a fifth or a sixth of the program is already accounted for in terms of the dollars being allocated. And there may be some more forthcoming, but you shouldn't count on that. Everybody should go out and try to do this as soon as possible. Financial institutions across the state of Louisiana are still working to access these dollars, but time is of the essence. The program is available through the Small Business Administration, and you can also apply for direct assistance by visiting SBA.gov. And I also recently announced that we have a new program here in Louisiana called the Louisiana Loan Portfolio Guarantee Program, which will offer loans of up to $100,000 to Louisiana small businesses of fewer than 100 employees who were impacted by the COVID-19 crisis. The loans will require no payments and will accrue no interest for the first 180 days and carry below market interest rates of no more than 3.5% thereafter. The loans will help businesses impacted by this public health emergency to meet their payroll, retain employees, pay rent, mortgages, and so forth, keep the lights on, and hopefully the doors open. And you can apply at opportunitylouisiana.com/COVID-19. That's opportunitylouisiana.com/COVID-19. And with that, I will take your questions. Greg.
Governor, yesterday you said your great fear was in letting people know some good news and striking an optimistic tone that you would see people reverting back. I saw a story on today that said that for the first time after Cuomo said something similar, that they saw tons of people out in New York City. So is that something that you actually have seen happen yet, or you're just a concern?
I have not. In fact, I haven't even been given reports about that. But it is a concern that I have, because we want to communicate with the people of Louisiana and be as accurate, as factual as we can be. And as soon as we started seeing numbers that indicated that we might be flattening the curve, I needed to tell them that, because that's different than what we were saying over the previous weeks. But what it really means is our mitigation measures are starting to work and to show up in the numbers. And the exact wrong thing to do is to stop the mitigation measures. And if you've seen the national modeling, they're now showing that it's possible that we will have far fewer deaths in the country than we were talking about just a week ago, 10 days ago. But all of those models are premised upon the assumption that we would continue to do the mitigation measures, that we'll continue with social distancing and the stay-at-home orders and that sort of thing. So if we break out of what we're doing right now and too many people go back to living as they would want to and not following the social distancing and so forth, I promise you our numbers are going to spike right back up. And then we're going to jeopardize our ability to deliver health care to those who need it within our existing capacity. I mean, that's just what will happen. And so we don't want that to happen. Yes, sir.
Governor, can you talk more about why we're seeing a drop in the number of people on ventilators? You mentioned hospitals are getting people off of ventilators more than you thought they would, and people are staying on as long. And also, at the same time, even as we're seeing this trend, are y'all continuing to seek out ventilators from other sources? And can you give us an update on how that's going?
Yeah, so we are continuing to seek out ventilators. We have received about 753. Since this started, but we are not continuing to remember, I told you we had about 14,000 on order. We're going to cut way back on the number that are on order at this point, because we don't want 14,000 ventilators to come in now. And so what we're going to do is we're going to take out of that order the ventilators that we would be least likely to use in an ICU setting. And so we're going to scale that back.
What would the total number be after that?
I don't have the total number. I think that it's somewhere another 1,000 or so we would leave on order for the state of Louisiana. If that's different, I'll let you know. And I'm going to ask Dr. Biu to come up and answer this question more specifically. But the reason we are seeing fewer people on vents is because of efforts being made by healthcare professionals, doctors, and others in our hospitals to treat people differently and more effectively in a way that keeps them off the ventilator in the first instance, or if they need a ventilator, gets them off sooner, which is incredibly important because that was the number one issue that we've been talking about. That if our cases spike, if we stay on the trajectory that we've been on, the very first thing that we would be unable to provide someone who needed it would be a ventilator. And so I'm going to let Dr. BU come and talk to you about what they're doing in our hospitals, because he can confuse you with all the medical jargon. I can't.
I'll try not to confuse. I think, you know, unfortunately, Louisiana was one of the states that really hit the wave of COVID early compared to our neighboring states. And I think that, unfortunately, they're going to be following after us. Fortunately, we have fantastic providers across the state, especially ICU doctors who are trying to learn and apply the best evidence. And that's what we're seeing. They're working to keep people off the ventilator, as the governor said. There are certain conditions for which you want to get somebody on the ventilator early as possible, and it shows that they do well. What we've learned from COVID patients is that COVID patients don't do as well if we push them on the ventilator early. So the idea is to use things like non-invasive methods, things you might have heard of in the press, like BiPAP, use those earlier on. And then once somebody does need that level of care and is on a ventilator, using the best evidence to understand how we can limit the time that person spends on a ventilator. And we've got real clinical leaders, national clinical leaders, in places like New Orleans and Baton Rouge and Shreveport and other places, really defining a protocol. One of the things that we're trying to do with the department is support that work, bring together those thought leaders so that they can really identify essentially a Louisiana protocol that can then be shared across ICUs, whether you're in New Orleans or you're in a smaller community, so that all of our docs and all of our citizens enjoy that same learning.
Yes, ma'am.
This is for a doctor again. I just want to know, when people die from this virus, how likely is it for the virus to linger in the body, or has research shown it goes away?
So we don't know the answer to that conclusively. One of the things we can say, because we do see people who are tested after they die, is that pretty reliably for up to 72 hours afterwards, we're seeing test results come back positive. What we don't know is if that virus itself is still able to infect people. Because remember, the way that we test for the virus really just looks for that trace nucleic acid. And that could be there and just not actually together in a format that it can actually infect somebody else. So we'll be looking to our researchers to tell us a little bit more of that information.
Doctor, can you tell us why there's such a disparity between the number of tests go for East Baton Rouge and Orleans Parish? We have about 5,000 tests here and 20,000 in Orleans. They have about 5,000 positives. We have one. So it would appear like the ratio could almost be the same, but why are there so many more testing done in Orleans Parish?
Well, so Orleans, unfortunately, was at the forefront of this outbreak. So they've been testing longer, and you have to keep that in mind, that they had a couple of weeks ahead. Also, that's where we've put, because of the level of COVID, we've put a lot of resources to ensure that we're adequately testing, like the FEMA sites that we have from the federal government. We have two that were consolidated in Orleans Parish, one that's in Jefferson Parish, and then we just have more hospital resources, more healthcare resources in the greater New Orleans area as well, more hospitals that are doing in-house testing. You know, what I will say, though, going forward is we are looking to see all of the communities, as the governor said, really rural parishes have more access to that testing, looking how do we reallocate resources, not just state resources, but also private labs, and foster their development so that they can serve the needs of those communities, because we really want to make sure that wherever COVID is, we are seeing it, identifying it, isolating it, reducing the spread.
But is there a way to ramp up faster here in the capital city?
Well, I mean, I think certainly we're looking at ways to address the bottleneck in the specimen collection kits. So you might have heard that there's a challenge nationally in those swabs that go in the nose. We're looking at alternative swab types and being able to use those. That would be something that would certainly increase not just the capital area, but statewide the ability to test more.
Doctor?
Yes, sir.
So one of the biggest fears for people who think they might get it, or that they'll die without a ventilator, and for a while we were putting dates where Louisiana might exceed its capacity. Is that date no longer in place? Not that it couldn't be, but I mean, are there now enough ventilators to?
So as the governor, I think it answers this question, you know, very well. There are so many factors that change on that sort of date. There's the ventilators that we've been sending into the state, both from manufacturers and the strategic national stockpile. There's the work that I just talked about with our providers being able to make more of the ventilators that we do have. And then there's the work that all of you are doing in staying at home, in socially distancing, in washing your hands, in not going to visit with your neighbors closer than 6 feet. All of those things move where we think that we would be in the need of projectors further and further down. And so we continue to gather that information, look at it on a daily basis, and give advice to the governor on where we think those numbers are. And we continue to see that they do move out. Again, that's because we're doing all of those things. And you know, the governor makes the point very well that if we start to relax any of those efforts, we wouldn't want to be in a position where suddenly now we need all those ventilators that that we're grateful not to need, you know, in the next coming days.
But on that point, I know the modeling is like for, you know, a week to 2 weeks out as the point for beds and ventilators. Are we no longer seeing in that two-week trajectory that we're expected to run out of either of those things in the New Orleans area? Do things look that good at this point?
So again, you also have to keep in mind that what we see in case counts and even in death counts is behind when the actual actions that changed those numbers took place, right? So we're still seeing now the effects of 2 weeks ago behavior. Some of the stuff that I talked about with hospitals, that stuff that changes more quickly, how well we manage our patients. So right now, we're seeing that this trend is promising. We're not yet ready to say that we're moving to a different level of infection from an individual. Or in other words, we're not able to conclusively say we think that we need to move that number further than we have already. So right now, we're not making that recommendation.
But where is the number right now?
I don't have that number at this time.
And I want to tell you, at the risk of, I'm not telling you too much, but because I want to tell you everything that we think we know, but this is a little bit confusing. I've been talking about how the most important number to our modeling isn't the number of new cases or the number of total cases. It's the number of hospital admissions and the number of deaths. And right now, if when we look at the modeling that exists in the scientific community, the trajectory that we're on related to hospital admissions is really good. The trajectory we're on, that if you just look at deaths, is not so good. And so the two most critical pieces of information are not in agreement with one another as to what's going on out there. And so we're still a little bit in the dark. And we're trying to figure out the degree to which our population may have a disproportionate number of individuals with those comorbidities that cause the deaths and so forth, or if there's some other explanation for why we're seeing more deaths in Louisiana than we would expect to see, or is the trajectory of our case growth really worse than we want it to be? And quite frankly, we don't know the answer to that question yet. But we don't, and if this is wrong, I'll correct it. I don't think in the next 10 days or 2 weeks we see that we will exceed our vent capacity because of all the reasons. We think the mitigation measures are working. We think the health care is being delivered in a way that keeps people off vents and get them off vents sooner, and because of the additional vents that we've been able to bring into the state. So all of that together, is we don't see that happening over the next 10 days to 2 weeks.
And the same on hospital beds, I'm assuming, as well, since that number trails.
Correct. But the hospital beds, this gets interesting too, because at some point there are people who've got to go to the hospital for things unrelated to COVID-19 who haven't been going to the hospital. And so at some point they're going to start going back because they're going to have to. There's only so long they can stay home and stay away. And some of the surgical procedures that have been put off because they weren't emergency, at some point they have to be done. And so the number of beds in our hospitals that are going to be used up by these non-COVID patients will have to increase over time. And we never know exactly what's going to happen in the COVID population, which is why we believe it's smart to have the Ernest Morial Convention Center set up as a medical monitoring station so that we can transfer people out of our hospitals and into the to the convention center. That's one of the reasons why we continue to move down that road, is because we believe that it's going to be necessary. And so I mean, but there's every day we're analyzing this from 100 different perspectives and trying to figure out where we are and where we're headed. And I can just tell you, it's very difficult to do that.
What has this virus taught us about the gap in healthiness between black Louisianans and Louisianans of another race?
Well, we think that that plays a role in the disparity in the number of deaths in the African American community. You know that we reported yesterday that a little over 70% of our deaths are African Americans, when they comprise 32-33% of our population. Now, the role that health disparities play in that, you know, we can't say with any precision, but we believe that there's a role there, because we know that the comorbidities that make someone particularly more vulnerable to this disease are those that are more prevalent in the African American community: hypertension, diabetes, kidney disease, heart disease, and so forth. But it is also true that if you look at where the hot spots have been and where the cases have been located for the longest in Louisiana, because remember, someone who dies today, they die today because of a disease they contracted 10 days, 14 days ago, or perhaps even longer. Those hot spots are in areas of the state that have a disproportionate number of African Americans living there. So New Orleans, the West Bank of Jefferson Parish, the River Parishes here in Baton Rouge, Caddo Parish. And so this is going to be a very interesting body of work and so forth. And I know that it's going to be investigated and be studied and so forth. And that's all going to be very interesting. What we know is we want our people to be healthier. It's one of the reasons we expanded Medicaid, is so that people who didn't have access to primary preventative care could get it. People who couldn't manage their disease by going to the emergency room can start to manage their disease and so forth, and we can become healthier. And all that's really interesting, and it's important. But what we're trying to do right now is figure out what can we do right now to make a difference. And part of that is going to be communications, making sure that everybody in the state is taking seriously their role in protecting themselves and their families and their communities by slowing the spread, talking about all of the things that we've been talking about here every single day. But this, it is very troubling to me. And by the way, I think we were the first to report this yesterday. And if you've been paying attention, the results are similar in Chicago, in Detroit and Milwaukee, and other places are coming online today talking about how a disproportionate number of the deaths are for members of the African-American community. So there might be something larger than just health disparities here in Louisiana. I just don't know. I don't know yet. Yes, ma'am.
Governor, in a lot of the other southern states, you have seen much more disagreement, at least publicly, between local elected officials and some of the state elected officials about how to respond to the virus. And we haven't seen a lot of that in Louisiana. What do you attribute the fact that everybody, at least on the public elected official level, seems to be working in agreement in some way?
Well, look, it's all I can do to pay attention to what's going on in Louisiana. So I don't know how to explain what might or might not be happening in another state. But I think because we quickly declared a public health emergency here in Louisiana for the state, because we quickly put in mitigation measures that were statewide, including when I felt it was warranted, the stay-at-home order, and that everything we've done has been uniform across the state. You haven't had an instance where local elected officials were left to make these decisions on their own when they don't really have offices of public health, for example, that they can rely upon. And they may not have access to all the best practices and the guidance coming from CDC and the opportunities that I have, for example, to call somebody like the Surgeon General or Dr. Fauci. So I think that has played a role in it. And the other thing I will tell you, look, we make mistakes and nothing is perfect and so forth, but we really communicate well with local elected officials, and if they call us with a concern, we do everything that we can to address it. And quite frankly, the biggest concern is people want to know what's happening in their communities. They want more testing. Well, I just told you, we've actually have the most tests per capita in the United States of America here in Louisiana. And much of that we've done responding to individuals and their request that we come into their communities and do more testing. We're not where we want to be, and we still have a long ways to go. But I think because of all of that, we've had a pretty good working relationship and good communication, and I think that's key. And we just need to keep that going throughout this public health emergency. Yes, sir.
Governor, we saw originally there was a huge influx of unemployment and food stamp applications that had overwhelmed the systems people couldn't get through. Can you give us an update on where those numbers stand and also whether those backlogs are still there?
Well, we do have a tremendous demand and volume of calls both into DCFS as it relates to SNAP. And also unemployment insurance claims, which are sometimes filed as a new claim, and sometimes they have to do that weekly verification that their status hasn't changed. I can tell you that we've increased the capacity to take more calls, and we've had the ability to increase our capacity online as well to receive applications. I believe the numbers through the end of March on unemployment were 155,000. Claims. Obviously, we've received new claims since then, but I am, to the best of my knowledge, I'm not supposed to report anything beyond last Friday, the end of March, until such time as we have a week at a time in order to report, and I'll be happy to do that. I will tell you, and it should surprise no one, the numbers have gone up over that time period. But people at the Workforce Commission and at DCFS are working extremely hard. Staying late and working till 7 p.m., for example, in order to process all the claims that they're getting. And we've waived certain requirements that allow them to get assistance out to people faster. So, for example, if you're filing an unemployment claim, you're not going to have to wait a week, which is what you typically would have had to do before you can get any benefits. You're not going to have to show that you're out searching for work during this public health emergency in order to continue to be eligible to receive those benefits. And so by removing those requirements, we're actually allowing the staff on hand to process more of these applications sooner. And it's not just processing the applications, but it's actually sending out the benefits. So for the unemployment, for example, I can tell you that and I don't have the figure with me, and I'll get it to you through Christina. But we're paying a lot of money out, and we've received guidance now on the pandemic unemployment assistance that is going to be administered by the Louisiana Workforce Commission for those people who are not employees. Let's say they're independent contractors, 1099 workers, or self-employed. There is help available for them. But the money hasn't been sent to Louisiana yet, but the guidance has. And so as soon as that money comes in, we're going to be making that assistance available to individuals. And I encourage those individuals, if they need assistance, to be paying attention to that because it will be administered by the Louisiana Workforce Commission.
Do you know when that money's coming in?
I don't know when it's coming. I would think it's coming in relatively soon. The guidance has come in, but the money has not. And I know that's frustrating because we do have a number of people who are working to make contact with folks at the Louisiana Workforce Commission, and that's the situation they're in. And the fact that they've made contact and provided some information is helpful, but we just don't have the funding available yet for those claims.
Last one?
Yes, Jeff.
Getting back to the whole ventilators thing. Last week the message was, hey, we're just a few days away from running out of ventilators, running out of hospital beds, and now all of a sudden it's 2 weeks. Are you concerned that it's given out a message to some that maybe this public health emergency isn't as bad as what was once predicted or anything like that?
No. Jeff, we've had over 16,000 cases in Louisiana. We reported 60 deaths today. 582 deaths. I have absolutely no problem that what I'm communicating means we don't have a serious public health emergency. But we are communicating the information we have when we have it. And when you go out and you tell people what your modeling currently shows and what those assumptions are, you always run the risk that the next day or the next week things are going to change. And things have changed in precisely the way that we wanted them to change because of the measures that we put into place. We told people, if you will stay home, if you will stop making contact, if you will stop going out for unessential trips and so forth, we're going to start to flatten the curve. And that means that less people will be infected, and that we can lower the peak and extend the duration of this so that we don't overwhelm our capacity to deliver health care. But at the time I'm telling people that, we have to prepare and surge our medical capacity on the assumption that that isn't going to be effective. And so that's just the fact of the matter. But if you get 2 weeks down the road and you're in a better place precisely because of the measures that you have put in to place through the stay-at-home order, and because you're getting compliance with social distancing and so forth, that is a good thing. And if you're improving the way you're delivering health care so that fewer people need ventilators, that's a good thing. And if you're using the time that you have because you're starting to make those changes in order to surge your medical capacity and get more ventilators in your hospitals, that's a good thing. And all of those things and some others that probably we haven't even thought of impact what that modeling is on any given day. So I am very pleased to come in here today and say that our modeling right now, based on where we think we are, we don't believe in the next 10 days or 2 weeks we're going to be short ventilators, because that means that if we're correct, that people won't die because they can't get on the ventilator. And last week I had the exact opposite concern. So I'm not concerned about it from a perspective that you just mentioned. I'm gratified that we are where we are, but I know that's only based on a couple days worth of data, and things can shift again, and they will shift again if people decide that their job is over and that they're no longer gonna comply with our stay at home and social distancing. If that happens, our cases will spike and we'll be right back where we were. Now, I wanna thank y'all again for helping us to communicate with the people of Louisiana. And I'm going to continue to ask the people of Louisiana to be patient, to be focused, to be resolute, because this is a public health emergency. It is extremely serious. And the numbers are dire. But they're a little better than they were last week in terms of the trend, we believe. But it is still the case that the hospital admissions number and the total deaths are not in agreement as to where we are as a state on that model. And so we have some more work to do just from the perspective of getting data and putting it in to figure out exactly where we are. But the work that we're asking the people of Louisiana to do remains exactly the same. Please stay home. Don't go out more than is absolutely necessary. And remember, you can go out and get your groceries. Do it once a week. And when you do it, don't take everybody in your family. And you know, it's just incredibly important that we continue to practice social distancing. Wear that mask now. That's a recommendation. Wear the mask when you're in public and you're going to be interacting with people. So when you go to the grocery store, you go to the bank, you go to the pharmacy, that sort of thing, wear your mask. We will have another press conference tomorrow at 2:30. And we'll have some more questions from the public, too, because I still don't like your questions. No, I'm joking. Thank you. Oh, by the way, the Saints played a great game last night. I hope y'all had an opportunity to watch.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.